Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Rockme.
And I'm Diana McCullum.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of heroic television or film. And this week on the show, we are talking about the new Paramount television series, Halo.
Paramount Plus's Halo.
Oh, you gotta
Not just that old Paramount.
Ah, it's Paramount Plus.
Halo.
I didn't even really notice that they were Paramount Plus. That's Disney's thing. You can't just do the Plus.
Yeah, because like Disney was already like a pretty solidified thing.
Yeah.
So like, because there's like a Disney Channel. So like Disney Plus made sense, but there wasn't ever a Paramount Channel.
Yeah. Take it easy, Paramount. All right, you're getting a little too big.
You don't even have all that much content.
Come on, so you're Paramount.
You're just Paramount.
Paramount, come on. You're Paramount streaming services. We know what you do. But we're talking about Halo this week on the podcast. We were talking about episodes 1 to 5. So, spoiler warning, we are going to be talking about episodes 1 up to and including 5, but we will give you a spoiler-free review off the top. Whenever we talk about a new TV show or movie, we give you a spoiler-free review. Then, once you hear the theme song, that is when we are going to get into our spoiler-filled section. And in that section, we will be discussing and we'll have seen episodes 1 to 5.
And in this section, we've seen episodes 1 to 5, but we're going to be vague about it.
Ah, I see what you're saying. We've only seen those episodes. But we're discreet.
We
will be discreet in the spoiler-free review, because discretion is key with us.
We are the most discreet.
We have so many secrets that we don't tell you guys about.
Guys, oh, you know what? Patrons only.
The patrons, they get the...
The patrons get the secrets.
They do get the secrets, as in the bonus episodes, like the past couple we've done on Twilight, which is over at patreon.com/fromsuperhero. We throw a bonus episode of this podcast up there every single month. Check it out if you want to have a look, if you're interested. Let's do the spoiler-free review. Let's get right into it with Halo. Spoiler-free review, simple question. Diana, do you like it?
I kind of like it now. I did not like the first few episodes. And I did not think, but it's a weird kind of did not like, because I never thought the show was bad. But for the first few episodes, it was really not for Diana's. I'm like, oh, this is a high production quality. The story makes sense. The fight scenes are really good. But, like, no characters I liked. Nothing super interesting happening. No lore being introduced that I was very captivated by. As the show's gone on, I have grown to like a few characters, which has really helped a lot. Like, I like Kai a lot. I like Soren a lot. John's really grown on me quite a bit. So every, like, group now has a character I like. So it's much more interesting to watch. And the first few episodes had way too many politics and stuff. It was in world building, and as a show like this kind of has to. But so it's gotten a little better. It's still not nearly a love. I'm like, I don't know if I care if we watch any more after this. But like as it went on, it definitely got way more enjoyable. I'm like, oh, I'm kind of in for the ride of what's going on with John now. Soren's super cool. The fight scenes still look really good. The production quality is through the roof. So it's a good watch. I'm having a good time now. But it took a few episodes to get there. So yeah, that's my quick thoughts on Halo, a property I know nothing about, by the way. I do not play video games. So my first thoughts on the Halo. So Andrew, what about you? Are you liking Halo?
Well, I will agree with you. Say that for our audiences, we both know very little about the Halo lore. So we're not approaching this as fans of the video game. Not that I have any particular dislike. I've played it mainly multiplayer. I don't really know the lore. I'm not into the canon. So I'm not talking about this from a fan's perspective, just from someone who's been watching the show. And to the question, do I like it? I really like it.
Oh, wow.
I'm having a lot of fun with it. I think it's very much for Andrews. I'm having a great time. I think that there are aspects of the show that are very good to excellent. There are a handful of things like costume design and a handful of the performances. There are a few things where I'm like, you've 100% nailed this. And I think that as when the show hits its worst, it's still fine. So I think that like the different varying aspects of the show will range from fine to excellent. I don't think that there's any aspect of this that's a full-on stinker or that is like completely derailing or bad or problematic. And I think one of the reasons why I'm really liking this show, and I think I'm maybe enjoying it more than the sum of its parts, is that I think it actually strikes a really good balance and something that isn't really on TV right now of sometimes serious, sometimes playful. Like, it is this kind of sweet spot of sci-fi drama, serialized storytelling, where it is not so high-minded and poetic and purple prose waxing philosophic. It hasn't gone off of the philosophical deep end of recent Star Trek series have, where it's like, we took the old adventures and what if we made it a very serious philosophical debate that never stops and never rests, which there is a place for that. But I feel like all sci-fi storytelling is either doing that, very high-minded, very heavy, or villain of the week, episodic. It is just kind of silly entertainment with no deeper anything. And this really, in many ways, which we'll discuss in the spoiler-filled section, reminds me to an era of Battlestar Galactica, where it's like sometimes we're going to do these little – sometimes we might do a quick romantic story, a side quest, a political thing, a war story. We might do political subterfuge. We might just do a relationship-building character episode. It's got a balance of a lot of different elements, which – not much on TV is doing right now. It's a lot of TV is just dedicating to one aspect or the other and going all in. So it really hits a sweet spot of entertainment for me.
I will agree with all of these points. Yeah, I think, as I said, I agree that nothing about this show is bad. I think all the parts about it I don't like are just not for Diana. So I'm like, I don't like political stuff. I don't like when there's no banter. I'm like, just things that I like in sci-fi. Like, I like when it's a bit more fun. But you're right that this is... it's like serialized, like there is a story being told episode by episode, but it's not too complicated despite how big the world is that they're building. And it is a little bit fun every time. But also, like, they probably will have a few philosophical things. Like, there's definitely some, like, what is the meaning of life stuff coming. Like, we know that for sure.
Some sense, some discovery of identity and self. Like, there's definitely some more philosophical stuff that they're approaching.
But you're right that everything is fine to excellent. Totally agree with that. And I like your comparison to Battlestar. Yeah, I think I can get behind that. I feel like there's very little, like, space stuff. Well, we don't watch The Expanse. I hear The Expanse is very good, but we didn't watch it. So I don't know where that lands on the radar. But, yeah, it really is just Star Trek and this for, like, in space right now.
Yeah, and it does feel like a bygone era of genre television, where it used to be that, you know, you talk about how there are aspects of the show that isn't for Diana. It's just not for Diana's. And as the episodes have gone on towards the more recent ones, they've gotten you a little bit more with different storylines. But that in itself feels like a bygone era of television where they're like, we're going to have different storylines that'll grab different people. Whereas a lot of shows are trying to be everything, like to a certain very select group of people. And I do like that. I think there is a place for both in television, but there just hasn't been a lot of genre pieces like this where it's like, well, let's get a few different storylines and some will be more appealing to some people over other storylines that we're doing. And that's totally okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I would say it's close to a really much more chill Game of Thrones because we do kind of now have this like characters are separated and might not meet for a while, which Game of Thrones was very about.
Right.
And like there is political stuff and there's wars and stuff, but it's in space. But I would say a chiller space Game of Thrones.
I can get on board with that.
I'm gonna say that.
Yeah, chiller space. I agree with your chiller space Game of Thrones.
Excellent.
I'm gonna say early seasons Battlestar Galactica.
We both got ideas.
But we both got a vibe for what this show is. Okay, so I quite like it, and you're a fine.
I'm a fine, but I get liking it. I'm not arguing that it's bad. It's not for me.
Okay.
So I'm in a weird place. I'm in a weird limbo.
Can it be spoiled, do you think?
Well, I haven't played the game, so I don't know.
Yeah.
As someone who hasn't played the games, nothing's come up yet that's a real spoiler?
Sure.
I guess. I feel like we're getting to a spoiler.
Yeah, definitely so.
We're getting close to one. So far, I'm not sure what we could talk about.
A handful of character turns, a few little twists along the way. Nothing huge, nothing that I think is load-bearing. I don't think there's been one particular twist or reveal that the genesis of the show hinges upon.
Yeah, there's nothing that's dropped our jaw yet.
Yeah.
Where we're like, oh my God, huge reveal. There's been like stuff we're like, we think we know what's going to happen. But we didn't get there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not in episode 5, at least.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I don't think it can be spoiled. I think it is just kind of some general storytelling spoilers and a few character beats and things like that. And not knowing the lore of the video games, then I wouldn't be able to say how it delineates or how much you could or could not be spoiled for you, depending on how much of the games that you have played.
We have no idea what the video games are about, what the spoilers might be.
No.
It's weird when we get to this part and it's like there are no spoilers, and it's like, why did we do a spoiler-free section?
You gotta play it safe.
We're safe around electricity.
Well, because even when we're like, there are no spoilers, I think I think that there are people who listen to this section who want to get a feel for it as to whether or not they should watch it, and whether or not it, you know, air quote, can be spoiled, or there's a Shyamalan twist. You know, if it gets the referral or if it gets the interest going, then I think that there are listeners who want to pause it here and then give the show a chance.
That's fair. Also tells you whether you have to, like, mute the Twitter keywords or anything.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Do I need to mute this show down to watch it?
Right.
A little bit of warning.
Yeah. It is not Space Game of Thrones in that regard.
No, I think you're good of not tweeting the Halo keywords.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen a tweet about this show.
It has really not got a lot of buzz or press.
For a show that looks really expensive and, like, must have cost a fortune? No press on this show. We were offered no screeners. We were offered no interviews, no anything. We're just like, well, I guess we'll watch it on our own.
We'll just watch it. And, you know, not that we're king shit or anything, but like...
Sci-fi network.
There's not a lot of buzz or press going around about this. And I think, you know, regardless to what our following conversation is going to be, it seems like we have some slight discrepancy between what we think about the show. I think it deserves more buzz and press and advertising than it's gotten.
Absolutely. It's like, some people are really going to like this, Andrew style.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, let's now go ahead and get into the spoiler-filled section. Let's talk about everything we've seen so far. Let's talk about Halo. Right, so we have seen episodes 1 to 5 of Halo of our boy Master Chief, who's out there having a good time. Old John, our boy Johnny.
He's chiefing around.
He's out there chiefing it up.
This might be a spoiler. Maybe it is. They take their helmets off. I hear that's a spoiler.
Oh, okay, yes, I know.
He doesn't in the game, right?
He doesn't in the game, from what I'm aware. I think maybe once or it was a big thing, but he's more of a, like, I never take it off in the game. And I think they even have the line in the show where it's like, you never take them off. And then immediately the show's like, we gotta take these fucking
helmets. He takes it off at the very end of episode 1, and then it, like, never goes back on unless he's actually, like, straight into combat.
Yeah. Yes,
It's quite removed.
It stays on for combat stunt person scenarios, which I think is a very reasonable thing to do.
Oh, so helpful to have a built-in lore that this guy always wears his helmet during stunts.
Absolutely. And I know we've already mentioned it, but nobody at us if you're a big Halo fan.
Oh, yeah.
All right? Like, calm down.
We weren't going to dip into the game lore if we didn't know it already.
Yes. I'm also surprised that there are, because, like, I've seen some review bombs for people leaving reviews for this who are mad that it doesn't match the lore of the games. And I can't think of a video game that is less lore dependent than Halo. It is a predominantly multiplayer-based game. Don't at me. Just chill out, everybody. This is a... I'm surprised they made it into a show because I'm like, it didn't feel
enough.
It didn't feel like it had enough outside of, like... It is very much... And, you know, granted, it took Star Wars, half a century to get there, but it is very much the Boba Fett Mandalorian to be like, this is a cool-looking character, and we've just built everything around that, and is that anything?
See, I assumed there was enough, because literally the only thing I know about Halo as a non-gamer is that episode of Unraveled where Brian David Gilbert read all the books.
It's a great video.
It's a great video.
Y'all, if you haven't seen that, go on YouTube.
He read every single Halo book and, like, reviewed it as, like, to get to the world. I'm like, well, if there's, like, 25 books, they got enough to make
a
show.
Sure,
if you can make a book, you can make a show.
You can make a show.
So I actually was like, I bet the show is based on the books.
I think
those wonderful Halo novels.
I think they're just going buck wild and doing whatever on this thing, and I'm okay with it.
They're doing a pretty good job.
I think that, you know, as someone who has played the video game but mainly multiplayer components and not really got caught up in the lore of the story, I will say, look wise, they have done a fucking impeccable job on this show. The shit looks just like the video game, and in a way where when you try to slavishly make something look like it's source material, sometimes it just comes out like shit. You know, sometimes video games aren't meant to one-to-one translate to film and vice versa. But this is one-to-one and it fucking pops. Everything looks crisp to death. I love how this show looks.
The show does look incredible, which is one of the reasons I'm surprised not getting more like of a push, because it looks expensive. Like the costumes absolutely, but I think everything does. Like even locations that they don't spend much time in look completely fleshed out and completely built. Like when they go to the rubble base where they meet Soren, they're only there for like an episode and a half. And that was a fully fleshed out entire planet. They built a transit system with the trolleys. They built like all the stalls, all the warehouses. Like I'm like, oh, okay, we're gonna spend the whole season on this place, right? You've spent a fortune creating it. Like, no, just like one episode. I'm like, that's crazy. It looks so good. It's so like it's all here. You built a working trolley system inside. It's
right.
It's indoors.
Right. I mean, yeah, like we've got that like the CGI shots of it
when
moving from asteroids and stuff. And the CGI also looks very good.
Yes.
But a lot of it is practical and noticeably practical. And this it, again feels like a bygone era of sci-fi where it's like you made a credible like alien planet, like space system marketplace. And the other thing that looks incredible about like all the practical shit of the show, the lighting, I love the lighting. It is.
Ooh, you can see everything.
You can see everything, but it's not so evenly lit. It looks like a sitcom. It is very low-key lighting, and this is also where it very much reminds me of Battlestar. All of the lighting is very set motivated. So not only is it like low key and kind of like shadowy and colorful, but it is very much like when Soren or a character is like near a TV screen in the marketplace, that TV screen is motivating the lighting that's hitting the side of his face. Like the environment where lights are within the deck of the spaceship is the lighting of it. And I'm sure they've hidden shit and there's some little CGI touch-ups. And that might even be more impressive, the fact that they take the time to do CGI touch-ups to have directionally motivated lighting for a TV series, for a streaming TV series, is phenomenal. It floors me how good just all of the shadows, lighting, color, and everything plays on this show.
Everything looks great. You're right. You're right about motivated lighting. Yeah, when they're on a spaceship, like monitors are lighting the scene in a way that like isn't like, oh no, it's a monitor light, but like, you know, you're like, I can tell where all the light's coming from. It's not just blaring at your face. You're like, no, this is all, it's all motivated. Yeah, and I think I went too quickly past your point about the costumes, because oh my god, the Spartan suits are incredible. Like I believe that you can kick ass and still be mobile and like that you're super strong. It's like a mech suit, but you're like, you're the mech because you're a superhuman. It's so, they're like, they're loud, but they're not too loud. And they also make you so big and imposing. Like
yeah.
When Kai is talking to the other doctor, I think her name's Miranda.
Yeah.
The one who translates stuff. And Kai's like 2 feet taller than her. I'm like, this is dope. Cause like there's like elevated platforms in the costumes and the big boots.
It adds like an extra foot to you cause you're massive. You're like a football player. And it's this perfect blend of like, it is, it's visibly plasticky, but not in a cheap sci-fi way. It is a plastic that you feel like has a form and function, that it has some kind of a force field or electronics. This like ribbing that they give the clothing as well. It's these little details like the shirt and kind of spacesuit, flight suit that he's wearing underneath the armor has this like these ribbing and these joint pieces to be like, that's extra padding between the armor, but it still needs to bend and function. And everything seems functionally motivated, but like lived in without being too weathered. And it's just this perfect balance. And when they add to that the sound design of this show, that absolute thud every step they take, because the armor, it is visibly plastic. And I love that Pablo Schreiber, who's the lead of the show, who plays John, is physically in there. We don't have the like the Marvel Universe floating head Tony Stark and armor syndrome.
No Green Lantern CG suit.
He's physically in there. You can see he's in there. And you can tell that it's plastic because he's a human man who's walking relatively comfortable. But he's also supposed to be stronger than your average human man, so this could be heavier. But that thud, that sound design adds so much power and imposing and like fear to these characters and to this armor, I think that they really nail that heavy whomp every time they take a step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really cool. One thing I also like is they also do the costumers are like telling part of the story through costume sometime. Like Soren is a Spartan who ran away, but he still wears his armor in some pieces of it because it's really, really good armor. So he's only got like half a suit underneath like a jacket that he's wearing to hide the fact that he used to be a Spartan. Because he's like, I don't want people to know I was a Spartan, but also it's fucking great armor. I'm not going to take it off. But like, no one ever talks about that. It's just a thing that we see. We see that he's wearing the armor, he's got a coat over it, and no one brings it up. So yeah. Just a little bit of like Soren character development via his costume.
Absolutely.
They kind of do the same with Quan, which is just like not so much character development, but just like what her life's been like since we've met her, because they keep her in that same bloodstained outfit because she doesn't have another change of clothes, because like everything just keeps moving that she's going through, and like the Spartans don't have clothes for her. And it's weird that Soren didn't have any clothes for her, not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Soren is like the leader of Rubble Base, and his wife is like super high-end fashion lady, and she didn't have like a new shirt for Quan to wear.
Let's lay into the wife for one second.
Oh boy, does she not fit in this show?
Not at all. This show is 99.9% like give wardrobe and costume Emmys. It is fucking flawless. It is impeccable. The design is perfect. The continuity of the blood on the clothing, the functionality, form meets function, everything's perfect. And then Soren's wife shows up, and she looks like one of the rich people on Snowpiercer. Like, it is this
Hunger Games.
Very Hunger Games. I am announcing the Hunger Games type of, like, very dramatic pageant type of thing where I kept expecting an evil turn, and it didn't occur. And she was kind of sweet, and they just did not match that costume to that character at all. It's a complete whiff on that one.
It is... Nothing about it makes sense that Soren, like the burly pirate king, like it makes sense that he'd be married to a beautiful woman, but not this type of beautiful woman who's like into fashion and like wants to look good for him. Like she doesn't seem tough. She doesn't seem like she would like pirate things.
Yeah.
She's dressed like a 20s flapper. She is.
She is. She is.
Who like really had a lot of time to work on her outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing about it vibes. And it's like, I think the idea was supposed to be he's the king of this planet and his wife like is higher end, but they didn't land on that at all.
Yeah,
that's a total whiff. The only whiff of the show.
Huge whiff. Yeah, because the other costumes too that I want to bring up was all of the UNSC, like the military uniforms look crisp and good as well, and they look all. Not brand new, but close to brand new. Like they look like what officers who've taken good care of their clothes would look like, which is a really hard thing to do for a wardrobe department, to break in clothing without making it look fully weathered and like shit. Because sometimes it looks like this is brand new and we stitched it together 1 minute. We finished making it 1 minute before they started filming. So it is the crispest, newest thing that's ever existed. Or we ran it through the mud, we ripped it apart, and we really weathered it. But all of these costumes look like cheap, practical cottons and wools that the military would actually purchase. Like, they look like they have been used and worn, but then very carefully laundered and starched for all of these military people. It is really the sweet spot. I can't give enough credit to the look of this show.
They did find the sweet spot. It looks like they just, like, ran it through the dryer alone a few times.
Mm.
You just pop it in there to get a little bit of, like, a wrinkle on it.
A little wrinkle, a little fade.
I love that, because... In contrast to that, I love that the only thing in the show that looks like brand new is when Bern Gorman takes over Madrigal and suddenly he's got like new Nazi bad guy uniforms, but they're crisp new. He's like, I just had these made because I'm the new like bad guy of Madrigal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My evilification of the planet has gone very quickly and very well, and now I have very evil uniforms.
When you become the new dictator of Madrigal, the tailor is waiting for you at the door, and he's like, how would you like your evil outfits to look? They'll be ready in a few days. He was crisply evil. So that was what I found. Like, that was like, the only new outfit in the entire universe that we've met, which I thought it was actually, like, worked.
I think it all works, yeah. I think that... One of the beauties of this show that just kind of impresses me is it is one of the few shows, movies, properties that we've covered in general, frankly, that feels like everyone working on it got more time than they needed. Because everything made feels rushed or had just enough time. This is a rare thing where it's like, I feel like every department got a little more money and time than was actually required to do the job. And it let them put a little extra spin on the ball, a little extra polish and English on there. Mm. And there was a moment for me where I noticed this. And this is, no one else should have noticed this. This is completely unnecessary. An unnecessary detail, but someone took the time to do it. And it is insane that they did, because there's no way a boss of any kind should have approved the budget for the man hours to do it. Within the helmet, within John's helmet, we get like some POV shots, but we get some kind of Tony Stark within the helmet things. On the heads-up display, very much like the video game, in the lower left, there's a mini map. It's a little circle. It's got the north, south, east, west. It's got your cardinal directions. And it's a little mini map. And very much like the video game, there's little dots on the mini map to indicate whether in front of you, behind you, left or right, where there are people. Okay. And it's like gray dots for friendlies, yellow or red for enemies. That's live updating with the actual position of people who are in the room with him.
What?
So the scene where he's in his like childhood house and it is Dr. Halsey and like the other scientists there and he's walking around and the little dots on his heads up display were moving. And as he turns to look at them, they're actually correctly oriented. So like whoever was doing, and that's a, moving a dot around is a relatively small thing to do in your visual effects department. But the fact that someone sat down and rewatched that scene multiple times to take the time to geographically pinpoint what's going on in the room to manually move a CGI dot, it's not a lot of manual labor. It's not particularly difficult, but it's extra man hours and it's an unnecessary polish that 0.01% of your viewers will notice. So why do it? But it really feels like a lot of this show got that extra time and detail.
That's super cool, and I did not notice it. It makes me think someone in the VFX department is just like a big fan of the games and was like, well, the dots have to match up.
If
these dots don't match up, I'm going to lose.
The minimap has to have the correct orientation at all times.
It's really cool because now that I know that, it makes me want to watch the minimap every time that comes up to be like, am I going to see like an enemy coming into the map?
During the last fight scene for like the big relic or whatever, I could see like the red dots were coming. It was different colors still oriented properly, which blew my mind. It's so unnecessary. It's so unnecessary, but it's so cool they did it.
Yeah, the whole world feels completely lived in. Mm-hmm. It's very like original Star Wars in that way.
Yes.
Yeah, like the only things that are CG are like the aliens.
Yeah, I think so. And they do a great job of the aliens.
Oh, they look
too.
Great. Yeah. Phenomenal. The aliens and the aliens like guns, which are scary as shit.
Yeah.
Like the biggest pop for me in this show was episode one when those teenagers just got exploded by the alien guns as our first introduction to battle. And I was like, what is going on?
I did not expect that as an intro to the show.
Just
as
some
visceral
teenager
and violent
murder.
As that was. A whole town slaughtered.
I mean, there's something worse about the teenagers, to be honest.
Right.
Because the town is like full of adult rebels, but to just be some like aliens who are like, oh, some teenagers getting high? Let's fucking eviscerate them. Like, that is some serial killer shit, aliens.
Yeah. Yeah.
They weren't doing anything. Yeah, they're like limbs got exploded off. It was really brutal.
It really was intense.
Set a weird tone.
One world building thing. So let's get into like the story, the world building, and what's actually going on outside of what it looks like. And that scene is a great example of that. There was one thing I noticed in that scene where I'm like, oh, this world building doesn't make sense. Small thing. These teens who were like doing drugs in the desert or whatever. They're like, we snuck away to do drugs, and they found like basically Dune spice or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah, we found some seeds that apparently get you high.
They're like, they get you high, but this is also what we use to fuel spaceships. And then they had like a bucket of it, and they were like, this could fuel a whole fleet for a year. I'm like, you're rich then.
Right?
Why are you poor rebels? Like, the cost to drug ratio, I'm like, no one in this world thought this through. This should be a designer luxury drug, because if someone was like, this is a drug that you can also power a fleet off of, you would need to be so rich to do that. And if you were poor and found it, there is no high that would compare to completely changing your planet and world. I'm like, I don't think anyone thought it through, the cost to drug ratio of this scenario.
If you could send a rocket into space on cocaine, cocaine would cost millions of dollars.
Yes. Cocaine's already a pretty expensive drug.
It's pretty expensive. But if it could send things into space with a limited amount, like if like a baggie of cocaine could send a rocket into space, it's not going up your nose.
No one's doing cocaine anymore.
No.
Very few people are doing cocaine anymore.
I can get behind that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But a very visceral setup, though, for the story of this first scene of like we get the teens, we get the Covenant, the evil aliens kind of crash landing, how brutal they are, how damn near indestructible they are, a really well-scripted opening for this series to be like false sense of security, absolute destruction, an inconquerable enemy. And then we introduce John, was it 116? 116 crashing down and just taking over shit.
Well, they also did a very interesting thing, which is that the humans aren't scared of the Covenant. The humans earlier in the episode are like, Spartans are killing machines. Spartans will come for us because they're rebels to the UNSC, this planet, Madrigal. So they think the Spartans are going to come kill them eventually. But then these crazy aliens come, and then the Spartans come up, and you're like, oh, are they going to kill the humans? But also when they don't, it's like, holy shit, they're so badass. They're killing these aliens. It is a very good setup of how the Spartans are not human. They are superhuman, even though they're human, but like they're elevated and they're way better than regular fighters.
And I think also a very good setup for the kind of the politics and world building of this universe that they've set up, where it's like we have these rebels, we have these people who don't want to join this coalition, and they're not even sure if the Covenant's a real threat, because the Covenant is a threat that either shows up and eviscerates you, or they're the boogeyman. Like, no one's sure. And the Covenant is also exactly the type of political boogeyman that a military power trying to force you to join them would make up, to be like, join us and we'll protect you. The boogeyman's out there.
Yeah, it's a little like Browncoats and Reavers.
It very much is.
Reavers leave no one alive, so do Reavers exist or don't they?
Yeah. So I think that it does a really good job of setting up this universe as well, to be like, the Spartans are the enemy if you're a rebel, but they're also the enemy of the aliens, which are real. So they can be a imposing tyrannical threat, or they can be a weapon if pointed in the right direction, can actually be an agent of change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really, really cool world building. I will say, story-wise, episode one put me off a little, and it kind of wheeled back from it pretty quickly, where episode one I was like, this show is The Mandalorian, and The Mandalorian's been out for a while, so it shouldn't be. We have this like stoic badass who doesn't remove his helmet, who's trying to keep a young person alive that everyone wants to kill. And I was very unimpressed, I have to say, for the first two episodes, that it was exactly The Mandalorian in space. Oh, wait, The Mandalorians aren't in space.
It was The Mandalorian.
It was The Mandalorian.
I think that is very unfortunate that The Mandalorian beat them to the punch, because, you know, it is what this game series is. Cool guy in a helmet who doesn't take it off, who goes around fucking shit up. And then Mandalorian came along and did it after the video games, but before this TV series. And I can definitely see how that would dampen the parade. Even though I think tonally, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is something very different and fresh, or at least not being done right now.
It got there.
But setup-wise, it did feel very familiar and very trite.
Yeah, the first two episodes were, I've left the UNSC, so now I'm a rogue, like kind of like the Mandalorian. I've got this one child with me who I have to protect. We're going to go on adventures together. So like the first two episodes, you're like, oh, this is exactly the Mandalorian. As soon as John leaves her and goes back to the UNSC, I'm like, oh, no, it's his own show.
Yeah.
So I was very relieved when he left her behind, not because like I didn't like Quan, but just to be like, you got to be your own thing, Halo. I can't just watch The Mandalorian again, because this is a high production value, but it's no Mandalorian.
Yes, so. Absolutely.
So yeah, it was pretty, pretty close.
I think the other thing that I was not a huge fan of, that I think they hit right away in episode one, and then they never let go of, for some stupid reason, is as we meet the prophet,
the blessed one,
the
human blessed one,
who is a human who's with the covenant, and we find out in the later episode that she was abducted as a child and is now basically accepted covenant society and is a high religious figure among their society because she can activate these relics, which seem to be a relic from a classic progenitor species, the typical sci-fi premise of, like, there was some species on planets millions of years ago before any of us, and now we have to war for the relics.
Just one time I'd love to watch a show about the species who built the shit. Just
never, give me the progenitors.
We never get shows about the progenitors.
Come
or
on.
Movies or just
yeah.
Give me something. Why is there always some mysterious species who made some shit better than us? Where'd they go?
Let it be us, maybe. Do that story. But anyway.
I'm sorry.
So no. Hey, I'm right there on this tangent.
It's always annoying.
It's always
Stargates, no one knew who built them.
Exactly. It's some Stargate shit. There's some ancient relics. An ancient species made it. The Covenant, weird aliens want it. The humans want it. And this one lady can access the relics, and she's been raised by the aliens, and she speaks the alien language, and we just don't need to. It is just so exhausting. I feel bad for this actress because she is giving it everything, and I respect her dedication, and I think she is doing Charlie Murphy is the actress's name. I think she is doing the best job with this that any human actor could possibly do with a credible alien accent while also trying to invoke legitimate human emotion. But we don't need to do this anymore as a series. Klingon was the last alien language that you had the option to create a whole language for, and people weren't going to laugh you out of the room. That was it. We don't need it ever again. Star Wars came along and was like, there's no reason for everyone to be speaking English. They are. And we as a society breathed a sigh of relief, and we've never looked back.
It is so annoying. Like, because you're right. Charlie Murphy's doing an incredible job with this, like, clicky, hard-to-pronounce language for the aliens are doing. But, like, it's so unnecessary. And the scenes are so long. If this was, like, she has one line every now and then, like, I will go to Madrigal. Or just, like, really, like, mysterious, like, one line at a time. I'd be like, okay. But they're having, like, long exposition scenes. Her and an alien.
Yeah.
About, like, what's going to happen. And it's just boring because it's not even a human language. I'm not like, oh, her Spanish is very emotive, then I just can't understand it, so we subtitle it. I'm like, it's nothing, and I'm just reading some subtitles. And there's such easy ways around it. Like, if the Covenant language just wasn't speakable by humans and the aliens had to speak English to her, because she gets abducted at, like, age 10. She spoke English.
Yeah, we just Han and Chewie it, you mean.
She was not raised from a baby who never learned English. So, like, if she just kept speaking English and knew both languages, it would make so much more sense. And this poor woman could actually do a scene.
What broke my heart, because they set it up, and then they made a beautiful cake, and then they threw it right on the fucking ground, was when they're setting up, they're like, she's going to have to go undercover. They're like, we're sending you back to the human race, and you're going to go undercover, and because we need you to help us find the relic that they have access to. So they set up this scene, and she's doing the, like, grata-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ta-gra-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka- humans. And at that point, I was like, oh, great. This is where the show is going to make the switch. Because you have to infiltrate humans and you haven't spoken English in like 20 years of your life. So now one of the aliens is going to be like, subtitled, be like, speak English around us to practice. And her character is going to, and be like, of course, you're a spy. You have to practice the language and accent of the people that you are infiltrating. That is some spy shit. You can't have, you know, if it's a World War II movie, you can't have a German spy who doesn't know or ever speak German. You have to practice the language. And she doesn't, and then lands on a ship, then murders a bunch of people, and goes back to the alien language talking, and I want to die.
Immediately.
Because they wrote the perfect device, the perfect plot device.
It is such a shame. Yeah, like there's, her English should be so bad. Mm-hmm. She has one shitty romance novel, which doesn't teach you how to speak English.
Yes, correct.
She couldn't even really read because the boy was reading to her in her little smoochy flashback scene where she got her first and only smooch. So like she can't read. Her speaking English level should be that of a 10-year-old.
Right.
She would have had no chance to learn English anymore after she was abducted by the Covenant. They seem to have no interest in learning English. Even and our translators only know like 6 words of Covenant. So there's no way she wouldn't be good at infiltrating. She'd be so bad at it. They should have been like, you can't go. You don't even speak English anymore.
Yeah. You're useless.
You're fully covenanted. Yeah, yeah, definitely. This poor woman.
Yeah, yeah.
So
she
get rid of the covenant language.
Get rid of that language. Yeah, the last sci-fi that got away with it was Star Trek.
And even they have universal translators. It would just be like one line, and they'd be like, translators on, and they would go into English.
And even then, me and you were kind of on the same page when Discovery was like, half the season's in Klingon, and we were both like, well, fuck you. We hate this. Why are we doing this? The actors are miserable. We're miserable. Why are we doing this?
It kind of feels like going too far in the compliment you gave a second ago about like the small details are incredible. It seems like they were like, well, we translated this entire scene into Covenant language and then we taught it to 2 actors and that's incredibly difficult. We had to figure out the verb conjugations and shit. And I'm like, it's probably very impressive, but this I don't need.
Yeah.
This isn't the dots on the map.
You have turned my words against me here.
I have. You're,
sometimes attention to detail can be too much. Sometimes good enough is good enough, and we can just move forward. I think the rest of the plot of this show, I like it for the most part. I really dig the Spartans discovering and unlocking their emotions.
Ooh, that part I really like.
It's something that's been done before. It's very, you know, there are scenes where I'm like, oh, it's a little bit Equilibrium. It's a little bit this and that, but I'm on board, and I think all of the Spartans do a really good job, especially like Kai and Master Chief do a really good job of selling it. I think Pablo Schreiber does a phenomenal job as John, because I think it is very tough where the actress who plays Kai, Kate Kennedy, who plays Kai, the female who removes her chip as well. She gets to have a little bit more fun and play a little bit more in that space. And she does a fantastic job of it, but she has a little bit more room to breathe. Whereas Pablo Schreiber as John, as Master Chief, he starts out as this stoic badass and he needs to retain that as this kind of hero lead, but still convey a lot of bubbling emotion under the surface. And I think he does a really good job of that, of kind of like playing this internal conflict a lot of the time.
He does do a good job. I do like John. You're right that he doesn't get to do what Kai does because Kai's having an incredible time. I think she might be my favorite character after what's happened in the last 2 episodes.
She's a goddamn blast.
When she took her chip out. Yeah, she's become a blast. But Kai has the... what she gets to have is she does just get to have fun and figure out who she is. But Master Chief is like, I have emotions now, and I also remember my dog and my family dying, and I have found out I have superpowers, and maybe Halsey betrayed me. So he's going through some shit, whereas Kai is just like, oh, red hair.
Red's a fun color.
She's got no traumas she's processing. I mean, now that she's gone into battle with emotions, she will be processing that, and sure. I actually think that's quite interesting. But she didn't have, like, a big life-changing moment. She kind of just chose to do this, whereas John's like, I am already going through so much, like, without the chip being removed.
And John, I like that he is...
I made friends with a little girl. I mutinied. And Kai's just like, what if my hair was red?
and I really like both of them playing off of one another and how that kind of works in conjunction, that John, as a character, is kind of playing it close to the chest, which is the smart move to be like, I have this girl and I don't want to execute a child. I need to get oxygen on the ship because they're shutting it off. I need to kill the cameras. I need to make sure my team is behind me. We're going to send you off. I'm going to go back. He's playing everything very cautiously while still feeling. And then when he sees Kai with the red hair, just him like running up, be like, you idiot.
No.
You cannot let people know you're feeling. Because John loses it in a couple moments, but it is like when it's no longer controllable. But him playing his cards close to his chest and Kai playing her cards facing outward towards the world is a very fun juxtaposition to the lead character. And I think they're both doing a phenomenal job with their performances as
they
well.
They are. You're right. Because John is freaking out but trying to hide it. Like, he is like, doesn't want people to know he took the pellet out, which is what they call it. I don't like the word
the
pellet.
The control pellet or whatever.
I don't like the word pellet ever since we watched Guardians of Ga'Hoole or the Owls movie. I only think of owl pellets.
Wow.
The word pellet has been ruined,
By the Legends of the Guardians, the Owls of Ga'Hoole.
Thank you. You always get the title, and
it
I never
takes
do.
It takes me a second, because it's so fucking funny.
Such a long title. But pellets were ruined for that movie by me, so I don't like pellet. But yeah, he is trying to hide it, and he's only freaking out it a few times. Like, you kidnapped me, or he's freaking out at the crazy guy who'd been on the Covenant ship and knew what the device did and what Blessed Ones were. And so he is picking his moments, but yeah, the moment when he saw Kai's red hair and was just like, no,
you're grounded.
You are grounded.
You are unstable.
Not,
you are not on this mission. You are grounded. Please shut it down.
Which, like, it's not, but I'm like, it feels a little sexist to be like, oh, you put a red streak in your hair, so you can't be in the army now. But it's not. He's right.
He's right. Just to be like, play it cool for a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll settle this out later.
He is a total hypocrite because she's right that he also has emotions now and should be grounded.
Absolutely. And so, I think
hypocrite, John.
I do really like the relationship between Kai and Miranda, the doctor, as they kind of developed a working relationship together. They were great scene partners for one another.
They were really cute. Well. I actually kind of felt they were going to smooch pretty soon. I don't know if maybe they'll smooch eventually. They felt like they were...
I could go for a smooch there.
They were filmed in a way that I'm like, oh, this is becoming romantic. It wasn't at first.
Right.
But like when it was just the two of them going through the language, I was like, this is filmed in a meet cute kind of scenario. And I really
don't mind it.
I'm actually surprised. It's the kind of thing that I'm like, I can't believe Tumblr hasn't freaked out because Kai is so big and Miranda's so little and a size difference is fun.
I really feel like
she's so like she's real Gwendolyn Christie in that outfit.
This is very much I'm like more people need to watch this show because the internet should be hornier about
this
one.
Yeah.
Because like yeah, you gotta pick up the little one just to kiss. Like
oh,
there's gonna
oh my
be...
god, and she gets super strength. She can.
She can. All the Spartans do a really good job, though.
Yeah, because the ones that don't have emotions kind of have to lay the baseline.
Yeah.
Like the ones who still are using their pellet.
You can
like
just
them.
Say who don't
I
have
know.
Emotions.
I can just
You're
say
choosing
that.
To say
I know, but I'm using the lore that the show has established.
The show appreciates that.
So the ones that have still don't have emotions have to set the baseline of like, this is what Spartans should be. Yeah. Oh, they also show also did a great job of really differentiating like the regular soldiers who are like playing ping pong and having fun and going to the bar. And then we go to the Spartan barracks and they're playing like chess and reading. And that's how they have fun. I thought that dichotomy was so well done without really like oversaying it.
Yeah, that like it's sterile, but they still exist at the same time. Like it's not...
They don't just go into a trance and shut down. Like they still want to be stimulated. They read and they clean their guns and they play chess, but they're not... They don't do anything for fun. They just do things to do things.
Yeah, and I think it really plays out well, and I love how they block the scene with the three Spartans. John's not there. It's the Kai and the other two who haven't been fully developed yet because they're still emotionless, so I'm sure maybe as episodes go on we'll get more from them. But it's Kai and the other one and Miranda, and they're having the scene where they kind of figure out language. Mm-hmm. And Miranda's first kind of going through her emotions, and she's thinking about the spiker, and she's holding the gun, and she's telling stories, and she's filling the space, and both physically and verbally, where when the other two are standing at the ready, hands behind their back, they do not move a centimeter the entire scene, not even to track that their friend has something off, mm-hmm. but Kai walking around and fidgeting and always having to do something because she's just filled with thoughts for the first time ever. And I also even like the writing of like, that is how collaboration begins, is that without the pleasantry, without conversation, without storytelling, they never get to the point where Kai says like, what's the word they say when we grab the spiker? And then we get a dialogue going. I think that also says a lot about collaboration and teamwork and I think it's a beautiful scene in the writing and in like how they plant these two, and they keep going back to the fact that they haven't moved and the fidgeting of Kai.
Yeah, they really had her moving a lot without seeming like too much, like it would draw too much attention, but like they were so still, and Kai was just like, I'm a storyteller now. I'm working on my first stand-up bit about about how my dog was killed. Like she's so much more emotive now, but not in a like not in a twitchy, like, breaking way, just in a very, compared to her companions, obviously she's, like, has emotions now. Yeah, yeah. Very, very well done scene. I love the idea that collaboration starts with dialogue. That is lovely.
Yeah, I think it's a lovely and well-written scene, and I think it's also kind of like the story that we're getting through John as well, even though he's playing his hand a little bit closer to the chest. I did remember one, I think, negative thing about the world costume design that kind of relates to what we were saying earlier. The one negative side is that the Spartan costumes, the armor, in the video games and in the show, they do a really good job of, like, you've got your sidearm, it's very practical, it goes to a certain place. The assault rifle or whatever, I don't know if it's magnetized or gravitized or whatever the fuck the in-lore thing is, but in the game, it's just you put it on your back and it just funk. It just kind of like magnetically sticks there. There's no reason for it to, but it does.
Hey, magnets, bitches.
And they do it in the show. And like the sound design's really good. Even though we don't see a device or get a lore explanation, sometimes just good sound design. He puts an assault rifle back there. Funk. That assault rifle is stored. I buy into it. Everything's good. But I think because the game never had him take his helmet off, they did not figure out a solution of what he should do with that helmet when it's off. So the entire series is him taking it off at the beginning of a scene and then awkwardly holding it because there's nowhere on the armor that is designed to store your helmet. There's no like waist clip. There's no anything.
And it's really practical, so you can't have like an Iron Man, like it just disappears.
Yeah. So I think they need to come up with some kind of a like, it clicks on or something happens because it really kind of limits Pablo Schreiber like throughout the scenes where he grabs it and he does have to awkwardly find new ways to lean on it or hold it or place it somewhere and then walk away.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. Yeah, some kind of like maybe it like collapses backwards into like your neck piece.
Yeah.
So he does not have to hold it. Yeah, you're right. It is a very bulky thing that he has to do a lot of scenes or just has to leave it behind. And you're like, well, I don't think he would. Battle happens everywhere.
Yeah, you don't leave your helmet behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can get behind that.
I think the one story thing that I think neither of us are really feeling is the whole Cortana element.
I have gone back and forth on Cortana. I hated her in the first episode she was introduced. She was so annoying. And so I didn't understand. Like, why? I'm going to throw a bunch of questions at you that are just like, just to show how weird this was. Like,
I'm going
to
be no help at all.
Oh, I don't want the answers. Okay. I'm just going to like be like, this is so many different things that are complicated. Why did we need a clone of you that we killed? Why are you a hologram projected out of John's body that everyone can see? Why does he say you look like Halsey when you don't? Why do you have a personality that Halsey hates when Halsey built you? Why do you have a personality? You're the first AI ever. Why aren't you just a computer? Like, so many things are happening. Why don't you follow orders? Like, this is not a show about an AI gaining sentience. It's a show about a man getting emotions. And there is a parallel there if you don't have emotions to begin with, or if you start with an AI that does follow orders and then she also mutinies, much like his own emotions are. That could be interesting. That's not what's happening here. It is just so many weird things about Cortana, and she's really annoying, except for like the later episodes when she really does just answer John's questions.
Mm.
When she just answers John's questions, I have no problem with Cortana.
I think that she's Whiplash annoying, where like they didn't set it up properly.
No.
If you just started watching episode 5, if you skipped the first 4 episodes, I actually think this is a perfectly fine and well-written kind of quippy AI dialogue where like, you know, moments where John's like, I can't hear my thoughts. And she's just like, there's not much going on up there anyway. I'm like, that's actually funny. That's actually like funny, decent punch-up dialogue writing. And Jen Taylor, who's the voice of Cortana, does, I think, a fantastic job of it. And they just don't get us to a place where this version of the character that she delivers, which I think she delivers well, makes any sense at all. Because it starts up with it starts out with, like you mentioned, like Dr. Halsey is creating this AI, and she makes a clone of herself, and we get a whole scene where she is speaking with her own clone. Because you need to clone someone, apparently, to vaporize their brain to make the AI. So she clones herself, and she has a whole scene with herself where her own clone has her own memories as well. So her own clone is like, oh, hi, it's me. You're the real me. Oh, that means I'm the clone. No, I understand. I'm willing to sacrifice my own life for science. This is beautiful. I only care about the Spartan program. I only care about success. I only care about getting this done. Vaporize my brain to make this AI. And we have this kind of creepy scene where someone literally encounters their own fate within a clone of themselves, and then vaporizes the brain, and then immediately Cortana shows up and has like this wild, zany sitcom personality. But why did we need the clone then?
Why isn't she Halsey?
Why
isn't she exactly Halsey? And also, she is way too zany. Like, the computer we get introduced to shouldn't be the funniest person on the show. And also with, like, just one-liners that don't fit this show. Like, I agree the line, there are not much thoughts in there anyway, is kind of funny. But it just doesn't fit the humor this show is going for. Or, like, any other tone of comedy in this show. Because Soren's funny, and Kai's a little bit funny as she gets emotions, but not in this way at all.
And it does fit the humor of a game.
Yes.
And that's the other thing that is the
she
problem.
She is game
is that,
Cortana, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. From the little bit I've played, she is. And even the writing makes sense for a video game where it's you are the player, and it is you, and you are shooting aliens, but you can't let the gameplay be monotonous, so you need a voiceover to throw in a little bit of exposition, a little bit of quirky charm, maybe a one-liner every now and then. A lot of games do it. It's a functional format that works, because when you are the player, you can't just sit in a vacuum and pull the trigger of a gun for 100 hours of gameplay without someone breaking it up. But when you have an ensemble cast, why is one character written like this?
And why? And she also is just like, she is like a sitcom character. She is so chill and relaxed and lean back in a world that is so tense and militaristic. But like, we don't know any characters like this. Like, not even civilians. Like, Quan is not fun. No one on Rubble is like this. Like,
it maybe is. Soren. Soren's a little fun.
I love Soren, and he was my next point I wanted to get to. But yeah, Cortana is real hit or miss.
Yeah. I don't know why they built it up with this clone storyline. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
And then it's not been brought up again that she killed her clone. It was such a huge plot point for 3 episodes. Like, it's illegal to flash clone people and kill them, but we're going to give her an exception.
Yeah.
And it's never been brought up again.
I think it's not going to be plot relevant.
No, it's never going to come up again. That there's a little piece of a clone of Halsey inside John.
And when someone in the room, I can't even remember if it was the other scientist dude or whoever, was like, she looks just like you. She doesn't.
Oh, yeah. John said it.
This
is what was so weird. John said it. And then I think Halsey had a line that was like, she looks like whatever will be most comforting to the person that's seeing her. And I thought that meant that like everyone sees her differently. But then a hologram shoots out of John that other people can see. And she doesn't look like Halsey at all.
It doesn't make a lick of sense that other people see her. Because that's a chip in John's head. He doesn't have external holographic projectors.
Did you also install a holographic projector inside of John?
Makes no sense. I don't understand why other people see her.
No.
And also, the show is more interesting if they don't. Also, her hologram does shit that is moody, that doesn't make any sense when you're not real or tangible. Like, John has a scene with her and like they're on bad terms and he walks away and then she'll like moodily walk away and look in a mirror, but it's like, you don't have eyes. You aren't seeing what's in that mirror. You're a holographic projection in his brain and he's left the room, so the mirror is no longer observed. So,
and the person you're projecting from is gone.
So what's happening? What am I, the viewer, watching right now? What am I watching?
Yeah, it's confusing. They have made some weird choices with Cortana that I don't enjoy, and they set her up so poorly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, maybe I will get on board, because like I said, if I forget everything that came prior, I like the read that Jen Taylor is giving this character. I don't mind some of the punch-up joke writing. If they ease up a little bit on the sitcom character gas pedal, then I can actually get on board with this.
I agree with what you're saying, that if she'd been there from the beginning, it would be much less jarring.
Yeah.
But, like, it's a weird thing to add so late that, like, now you've got a comedic character and we're four episodes in. I'm like, okay, it's been quite serious till now.
Yeah.
Except for Soren, who I do want to talk about next.
Let's talk about Soren.
I don't have that much to say about him, but fuck, he's crushing it.
He's great. That's all you need to say.
So fun. Like, he feels fully fleshed out. He feels so, like, I feel like he's a badass, but he does have, like, a little bit of niceness to him. I can feel that history with him and John of, like, he wanted to leave, and John, like, only gave him a 5-minute head start, which was a dick move, John, but gave him a bit of a head start.
Bokeem Woodbine.
Bokeem Woodbine.
Phenomenal performances. A lot of, like, real charm and personality that he has injected into this character.
Real charm, real badassery, like a cool badass, not just like, because, like, John's a stoic badass, and then Soren's a cool badass.
Yeah. He has really found that kind of line between I was trained without emotions to be a killer, but I got my emotions back.
So now I'm just a killer.
And that makes me nicer when I choose to, and terrifying when I choose to. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the choice to be terrifying is often scarier than the necessity to be terrifying.
Yeah, he's got a lot of layers. I actually think he's, like, the most interesting character. Like, one of his final scenes was with Quan or whatever. He's like, my memory slowly came back after I took out my pellet. And then I remembered that my mom died. And then I remembered that my father died. And I was the one that killed him. And then he didn't elaborate. And I'm like, I need to know more about Soren.
So
I need to know more about this guy.
So complicated, so interesting. Yeah, 100%. He's a fascinating character to the point that I'm like, if this was the show, I would also be on board with that. Or if there were two shows and, like, the Soren one also really works.
Yeah, I mean, Soren and Quan seem to be, like, half the show now. But, like, I'm much more interested in Soren than Quan because Quan's just doing some bad rebel shit at this point. I mean, I like the idea that she was going to restart the rebellion, but that rebellion's dead, girl.
That rebellion is for sure dead. There is no way that you were taking down the evil Nazi-like villain played by Bern Gorman, who's also phenomenal.
He needs way more to do. That once, he only really has one scene. That's the one in the tub. And it is phenomenal.
He's a phenomenal actor.
He's so good, but he, like, eviled the shit out of that scene without going too over the top. Just like, oh, it was delicious. It was a delicious bad guy scene.
Delicious is the right description of them.
Yeah, like, he was having so much fun that it tasted good. Like, he made me a delicious meal of bad guyery, and I loved it. I want way more scenes with Bern Gorman.
Now, that does lead me to, I think, one criticism that I have of the show. And granted, we're only 5 episodes in. We haven't seen how everything plays out. But I think even by 5 episodes in, the A, B, and C storyline should have resynchronized, and they haven't. So we've got the A storyline, obviously, is Master Chief. It's John getting his emotions and finding the relics. Mm-hmm. We have the Covenant, who are starting a war and chasing the relics. And then we've got, like, Quan and Soren, who are dealing with a rebellion on this planet. And at one point, the Covenant and, like, the clicky lady are on the same planet as Soren and Quan dealing with the rebellion, and they're wandering the desert, Soren and Quan, and then somewhere at a random cave, the Covenant crazy terrifying aliens are there. I'm like, oh, they're gonna run into one another. And they just don't.
No.
Just ships in the night, they pass by one another, but not in a poetic or pondering way to be like, wow, how close was that?
Just not in a way that made us go like, oh, phew, Soren and Quan made it out.
Yeah, just in a way that was like, yeah, we only, like, came up with a couple planets to use for this series, so we're going to have to recycle some of them.
I completely agree. Yeah, your B and C plots were on the same planet and didn't intersect, and they have the entire universe where they could have intersected. And yeah, because Quan, it's so easy to intersect them. Like, the Covenant's looking for the artifact. Quan spent a ton of time with it. She was on the ship when it exploded one time. So if they're just like, what's the residual energy? And they're like, well, there's this one girl in the desert. And then they go. And they find the one girl in the desert. And now they're like hostages or whatever. And they go and find John. Like, it's so easy to connect them. But now they're just gone. And I guess Quan and Soren are going to go look for the mystics in the desert. Completely unrelated to the Covenant and what John's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
No. I mean, I guess they're going to intersect now because they've left Clicky Lady with John. At the end of this episode?
Well, like, John and Clicky Lady are intersecting, but, like, Quan and Soren are still just kind of off on their own solo adventure.
Yeah, they're Khaleesi.
Yeah, and it doesn't really have anything to do with the relics or the Covenant. It is just...
I mean, the Mystics might, but they're going to go find.
Oh, right. They're about to go see some, like, Shakespearean level, like, witches in the woods.
Who tell you your destiny. Yeah. So they might know what the artifact was and have, like, information, is my guess.
Okay.
If they're just people who know how to do rebellions real good, I'm going to be super upset. Because then Quan's whole storyline is pointless.
Yeah, we got to find a little more
meaning for Quan's
storyline.
I don't care about Madrigal when we got, like, the Halo? Is it the Halo, you guys? They called it a Halo this episode. I'm asking the listeners.
Is that the titular Halo?
They said it was a Halo.
The relics.
The relics were the Halo. They make a Halo.
The relics make a Halo of some sort.
I don't think it's named after the Beyonce song, even though I sing it every time we watch the show.
And that will be of the Halo relics will be of importance at some point, perhaps, maybe. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and hopefully Quan finds some or gets some information to share with John that helps, and then they all come back together.
They will all come, maybe.
Maybe.
We'll see how it all plays out.
We'll see how it all plays out.
Well, I'm feeling pretty good on Halo. How you feeling?
I'm feeling real good. One last thing I'll just say is I do love that, like, four episodes of this show were just about John trying to remember his doggo.
Love the dog.
Really makes him a relatable character. Because if I touched an artifact and it was like, you had a dog that you forgot about, I'd be like, I need those memories back.
We got to go back.
We got to touch the artifact again. I have dog memories. I need to know what happened. And I respect John for that. Because I don't feel like he cared about his parents. Just kept seeing that dog.
Oh, no, yeah, just about the dog.
Just the dog.
Just about the dog. Well, I think he knows those parents are gone, but like... But
I think the dog, by this point, he's like, it's been like 15 years.
Nah, dog's fine.
I mean,
next episode.
The future.
Next episode.
We got dog vets.
That dog is back. That was an alien. The dog is the progenitor species.
Ooh.
The dog was the guardian.
He gave him some superpowers so he can touch it.
The dog was the guardian of the relic.
I love it.
There we go. It's all coming together.
We fixed it.
Let's go in for our change. So we're going to ask the final question of what would you change? So now that we discussed everything we discussed, what would you change about the show if you could change anything? Before we do ask that final question, we will remind you, our wonderful listeners, as we do every week, please rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, wherever you get your podcasts. I know we tell you this every week. If you've already done it, skip ahead. But it's a free way to support the podcast. You just leave a star rating. If you're on an app that allows you to leave a review, please leave a review. It can be a couple of words. It's very simple and easy, and it really helps us move up the charts and find new listeners, and it increases our numbers, which is how we make a living and keep making this podcast.
It helps the podcast. It helps our egos and our hearts when we read kind words, and then we're better at our jobs. So you are our performance review, you guys.
There we go.
This is the only feedback we get from our bosses.
We're hip and happening.
And relevant.
And relevant.
Don't forget how relevant
we're
hip
and happening and relevant. Appreciate all of you who left a review that said we're hip, happening, and relevant.
That's
awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And as well, if you want to support the podcast monetarily, you can do that and get cool extras for doing so. If you check out our Patreon at patreon.com/fromsuperhero, every month we put an exclusive episode of the podcast up just for our hero level patrons.
And this month we did two episodes. We did Breaking Dawn Part 1 and 2. Those are Twilight movies, if you don't know. And what an experience we went on. We went on the full Twilight journey. So if you want all the Twilight movies, you got to check out our Patreon, and then we've covered all five.
You can't imprint on a baby, y'all. You just can't do it.
Spoilers for the episodes on
Patreon.
Spoilers
for Twilight, but you can't do it. Justice for Jacob.
Justice for our good boy Jacob.
They did our boy Nasty. You can't do this. So check that out. That's available right now, and every single month we release a new episode, and when you sign up, you get the whole back catalog. Patreon.com/FromSuperheroes. It's patreon.com/FromSuperheroes. If it's in the budget, if it's not to get the episode, then if you have like $1 in the budget, you can also become a $1 level patron if you just want to support us and those add up and really make a difference in our life. And if it's not in the budget, we understand. But if you have it, check it out, patreon.com/FromSuperheroes.
Thank you so much, all of our patrons.
Thank you. And now let's ask the final question of what would you change? Diana, what would you change?
My change is controversial because I think we talked earlier about how the opening was very good of introducing like the Covenant versus the Spartans. But I don't like that episode 1 opens from Quan's point of view because episode one, he touches the artifact and then his whole personality starts changing. But we didn't really know John before he touched the artifact, and it's been really bothering me. Like, I can guess what people are like when they don't have emotions, but he touches the artifact and everyone's like, oh my God, he's mutinying. Oh my God, John's doing stuff he doesn't normally do. And I'm like, I didn't meet John before this moment where he touched the artifact. I needed an entire episode of just John being like stoic and following orders and never questioning anything, and then seeing that he actually changes when he touches the artifact. We're being told he's acting differently, but I really needed to know John before he touched this thing, so I can like really feel the difference of what's happening when you remove this nugget, or like get your memories back, or learn to rebel, or whatever's going on here. So it's really just a change for the first ones, because like as I said, I like the show a lot more as it goes. So I kind of just want to change the beginnings a bit. So yeah, I'm gonna say episode one is a half and half Quan's POV and John's POV of like he's on his way to the battle, Quan's in the middle of it, and it's still like a cool fight scene. But I need way more John off the top. That's my biggest change, I'm going to say.
I think that's a great one. I fully agree with that. And I think that even kind of could continue on throughout the series. I think that Quan's an interesting character and the actor's doing a good job with it. But it is getting kind of a half and half. And I feel like Quan needs to be as much a support character as anybody else right now.
She's introduced as the lead.
She's introduced as like the POV lead of the show and then kind of separated from our iconic main character. And I feel like it's a good character, but it deserves as much screen time as everybody else in the ensemble. Mm-hmm. And that would be a great solution for it and add a little bit more to John, 100%.
Thank you. So yeah, Andrew, thank you so much. What would you change?
My big change, I would say that Cortana is there in episode one, like the digital version of Cortana. So we never need the, like, what if we do a clone? Clones are illegal. I did a clone. I uploaded a clone. Now my clone is the AI and also has a totally new personality, but no one's going to ask any questions about it or be thrown by that in any way. And we're all going to move forward like that's normal. Just have the AI already exist. And I think that that is a brilliant thing. And then if I were to combine that with yours, I think it plays out really well to have just Cortana there from episode one, just ready to go. Because then as John develops a personality, we have someone who has seen him and worked with him without it, who's in his own head, that he can actually flesh out what it is that he's feeling, kind of talk these things out a little bit more, or someone who can kind of have these quips and one-liners because it's like, Cortana's an AI that is a true intelligence that has been kind of talking to herself all these years while he's been doing missions because he has no personality. But now it's very jarring for her that he tells her to shut up. And he's never told her to shut up before because he's never cared either way. Mm-hmm. So I think that like having her there from the jump really would make a difference for her character and also really kind of give a bouncing board quicker for John to have these experiences off of. And also, no one else sees her.
Love no one else sees her.
No one else sees her. Because then he is someone who actually can confide and talk out what it is that he's going through. Even though Pablo Schreiber is doing a phenomenal job of just visually conveying a lot with his face as to like, I feel sad, but I can't tell anyone. Mm-mm-mm. But if he could talk things out a little bit more, I think that would just be a nice narrative device as well.
I love this for so many reasons. Yeah, Cortana being there, much less jarring when if she's not showing up late. You can even have her personality grow with John's if she maybe is a little flat when we meet her, because like John's flat, so why would she be joking? But like
maybe she's affected by the relic as well.
Yeah, like maybe because she's part of him.
Maybe the relic is what makes her a problematic AI that doesn't follow the orders that she's being given anymore. A
lot more fun stuff to explore if we establish Cortana and John before the relic is touched. I think that's way more interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love this change.
Yeah,
excellent.
I'm on board with yours as well. We need to get more flat John off the top, but in a fun way to be like, check out this like stoic badass. And then I think it does like make a nice, your change makes a nice like record scratch kind of moment to be like, this is the Mandalorian, you know that show. Actually, no, it's not. We're injecting way more personality, helmet off, let's fucking go. Mm-hmm. And I think that actually makes it more of a like, whoa, okay, you're not what I expected this show to be.
Yeah, if he had an AI in his head, it definitely would have been way more not Mandalorian as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If he's like quipping with someone, or at least like talking to someone who is quipping back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love it.
Love it. Love this. We've improved this.
We did it.
Well, bow. That is going to be it for this week. We've discussed everything we need to discuss about Halo, and we've done the job. And next week, we will be back. Next week, we are building up to the release of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So we're diving into some Sam Raimi cuts. Next week on the podcast, we're going to talk about Evil Dead 2.
That's real fun, because we've already done Doctor Strange, so we couldn't do Doctor Strange again. So we've
done Raimi's Spider-Man.
So we're going with other Raimi. So we're doing Evil Dead 2. I'm very excited. It should be very fun.
It'll be a very fun week. So we'll be back with that next week. In the meantime, if you want to get more of this podcast, you can check out patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And if you want to reach us on social media, you can hit me up at Ivamey, I-V-I-M-E-Y.
You can find me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll talk to y'all next week.
Bye.